for exceptionally distinguished public service to our country. From January 20, 1981 to January 20, 1989, President Reagan, our Commander-in-Chief, rebuilt America's defenses and restored our nation to a leading role in the community of free nations. He assured this nation a defense force capable of inspiring the confidence of the American people and our allies, and which warranted the respect of our adversaries. President Reagan restored our nation's pride in itself and our nation's armed forces' pride in our uniform, and all demonstrated deep and abiding care and concern for the welfare of every soldier, sailor, marine, and airman. President Reagan's confident leadership and great personal courage have been an inspiration to our military men and women and reflect the utmost credit upon himself and our nation. It is my distinct honor and great personal pleasure to present Ronald Wilson Reagan, 40th President of the United States, the Department of Defense Medal for Distinguished Public Service. Signed, Frank C. Carlucci, Secretary of Defense. Along with the Department of Defense Public Service Medal, on behalf of each service, Secretary Carlucci also presented President Reagan with the Army Distinguished Service Award, the Navy Distinguished Public Service Award, the Air Force Decoration for Exceptional Civilian Service, and the Coast Guard Distinguished Public Service Award.
At this point in the ceremony, the color guard, which has been in front of the stage where the president's standing, will leave the room. And at this point in the original schedule, Mrs. Reagan would have received her certificate. But as I say, we've been told in the past few minutes that she's not here, and we don't yet know why she's not here.
Now, for those cable companies that must break away, this is a CNN special report, President Reagan's farewell to the military. This is a CNN special report, President Reagan's farewell to the military. We're at Andrews Air Force Base in a cavernous hangar, which one day will be used to maintain in service the 747s, which will become the new Air Force Ones of the 80s and 90s, when they are delivered, that is. They are a little bit late, but this makes for more room for the salute
Ladies
to the president
and
the salute
Joint
from the president to his military.
William J. Powell, Jr.
Been informed, by the way, that Mrs. Reagan is a little bit under the weather today, and that's the reason she did not accompany the president out to Andrews Air Force Base by motorcade. Mrs. Reagan reportedly has a sore throat, and therefore she wasn't able to join her husband today, as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Admiral William Crowe, addresses the gathering.
Mr. President, the weather won't be like this in California. Mr. President, it is truly an honor for America's armed forces to pay tribute to you this morning. Equally important, we want to thank you, and to thank you sincerely for the legacy of strength you are leaving to our next Commander-in-Chief. We celebrate those contributions not in their own right, but for what they have meant and will mean to the United States and indeed to allies and friends overseas who look to our nation as the prime guarantor of their security. Mr. President, the men and women of the military services are proud of their role in the country's life. They man the battlements of freedom around the world. Behind that shield, American liberty and free enterprise flourish, and millions of the world's citizens live in peace and go about their daily pursuits unintimidated by external interference. Yet that defender's role can often be a thankless one, particularly at times that seem tranquil to an affluent and peace-minded public. Many in this audience have served through more than one of those frustrating periods when our ability to live up to our citizens' expectations and needs was badly eroded. Such was the case in the years before you became Commander-in-Chief. But if this nation can stay on the course that you have charted and led, it will not be so again. All that this society stands for. All that this society stands for will be safer as a result. And I can't think of a better measure of a man's accomplishment than that yardstick. But there is one other thought we'd like to leave you with this morning. Mr. President, 8 years ago, your first inaugural address urged our citizens to believe in themselves and to work hard together to make America perform as only this country can. You quoted from the Diary of a Soldier, Marvin Treptow, who had been killed in action in World War I. In his diary, he said, "America must win this war. Therefore, I will work, I will save, I will sacrifice, I will endure. I will fight cheerfully and do my utmost as if the issue of the whole struggle depended on me alone." You went on to observe that not all citizens will be called upon to make the sacrifices of soldiering, but in their own lives, they could well take a lesson from the spirit of selfless commitment and hope that animated Marvin Treptow. Let me assure you, Mr. President, the service men and women gathered to honor you this morning are part of that tradition. They believe they serve a noble cause. They take pride in their labors on behalf of this great republic. This attitude has been fostered by your administration. More importantly, it has been encouraged by your personal example and your pride in the accomplishments of the armed forces. You have made patriotism fashionable again, and serving in the military attractive. Your influence is reflected every day in our recruiting and retention statistics, and especially in the spirit of our young people. On a more personal level, it has been inspiring to have a commander-in-chief who talks about the horse cavalry and who openly admires courage, patriotism, and a sense of public duty. In a very real way, that's what military life is all about. We want you to know that we have been genuinely sustained by your appreciation of our efforts and our problems as well. The love of country of which you spoke in your inaugural address has been enlivened under your leadership. We are deeply grateful to have served under you and with you for the past 8 years, and we look to the future of this country with confidence. As for your future, Mr. President, you will leave Washington with our greatest respect and affection. We wish you and Mrs. Reagan Godspeed. And if my non-Navy colleagues on the Joint Chiefs of Staff will pardon a nautical idiom, on the behalf of America's men and women in uniform, Mr. President, I wish you fair winds and following seas in all of your future endeavors. Thank you, sir.
So the president has taken the warmest farewell greetings from Admiral Crowell, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. Ever a Navy man, wishing him fair winds.
The Secretary of Defense, the Honorable Frank C. Carlucci.
Now, the current Secretary of Defense, Mr. Carlucci.
Mr. President, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. President, your troops welcome you. It's a pleasure and an honor for all of us to participate in this salute to our Commander-in-Chief. Let me at this time also extend a special welcome to former Secretary of Defense Caspar Weinberger and Mrs. Weinberger. It is indeed fitting that Cap share in this salute, for the much of the success we celebrate today is due to his outstanding leadership during his nearly 7 years as Secretary of Defense. As part of our salute to you, Mr. President, at this time, I would like to have presented to you a flag embroidered with the logo of your commission on the bicentennial of the United States Constitution. Under its chairman, retired Chief Justice Warren Burger, and through programs developed by John Marsh, the Secretary of the Army, and my executive agent for the bicentennial commemoration, the commission has been helping the men and women of our armed forces salute the constitutional heritage they protect on our behalf at their duty posts around the world. Mr. President, perhaps more than any president in recent memory, you have been conscious of your special responsibilities as Commander-in-Chief. This has come through clearly to every member of the armed forces, whatever their rank and wherever stationed. We pay you the highest compliment when we say to you, sir, that your command has been a success. We will all miss you. Today, our military stands taller. Its members are more respected in their communities, better qualified, better educated, and better trained because of your leadership. From your first visit to the Pentagon, your deep personal interest in the men and women in the armed forces as individuals has been an inspiration for all of us. You read our letters. You support our needs. You understand our mission. And you and Mrs. Reagan share our moments of pride and grief. No one in the military will forget the tenderness you and Mrs. Reagan demonstrated to the individual families of those who gave their all in the 101st Air Disaster or in the Stark tragedy. You care, sir, and it shows. Your vision of a strong America assuming its rightful role on the world stage has produced lasting results. As you said last night, our nation has moved from self-doubt to self-confidence. A new relationship has been forged with the Soviet Union. A precedent-setting treaty has been signed which reduces nuclear weapons. Progress has been made on START. The Soviets are leaving Afghanistan, the Vietnamese Cambodia, and the Cubans Angola. And your determination, backed by a strong and willing military, has helped bring about a ceasefire in the vital Persian Gulf region. We in the military are proud to have contributed to these and other foreign policy successes of your administration. You have restored not only our national strength, but also our sense of purpose. Your vigorous defense of our nation's ideals and institutions has reminded all Americans that freedom is a concept worth defending, and its defense is a sacred duty each and every member of the armed forces has freely undertaken. Mr. President, about a month ago, after delivering your valedictory speech on foreign policy, you were asked what you felt were your most important accomplishments as president. This was your response. When I took office, on any given day, half of the military aircraft of the United States couldn't fly for lack of spare parts. Half of the ships in our Navy couldn't leave port for much the same reason, or for lack of crew. And I immediately met with the Joint Chiefs of Staff to talk to them about restoring patriotism, where the young men and women in uniform would not feel they had to get into civilian clothes when they left the base, but would be proud to be seen wearing a uniform. And of the things I am proud of the young men and women who are wearing the uniform more than anything else. I hear more and more people talking about the pride they have in our country. Mr. President, the pride people feel today, certainly the pride felt by the men and women of our armed forces, is a direct result of the leadership you have provided as Commander-in-Chief. On behalf of the men and women of the armed forces, and for myself, let me say it has been a great honor to serve you and to serve with you this great nation. Mr. President, let me now call your attention to the television screen, and for those of you in the audience, the large screen to my left, to a special salute to you for all you have done for us.
Mr. President, early in your presidency, some people were trying to forget Vietnam. But America's veterans were hoping you'd remember. You did. And that signaled a new beginning for our nation and for our men and women in uniform. As our Commander-in-Chief, you rekindled pride in America and pride in America's armed forces. Under your leadership, the quality in our military ranks rose dramatically. And we have sustained that quality by showing our military people and their families how much we appreciate their service to their country. The equipment we needed to do the job also gained dramatically in quality. You championed the long overdue modernization of our military capabilities on land, in the air, and at sea. Our rebuilding included more intensive training, enabling our forces to achieve the best peacetime readiness in our nation's history. And when you had to call on those forces, they were ready. In 1983, a joint force of soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines rescued 600 endangered Americans and ensured the restoration of democracy to a troubled nation in the Caribbean.
You all have one hell of a lot of thanks to these guys who went in and got you out.
In 1986, Air Force and Navy aircraft were called into action to respond to terrorist elements in the Middle East. Our fighting men performed well as they gave your message to those who make terrorist attacks on Americans a way of life. That message, you can run, but you can't hide. In 1987, when new threats to international shipping emerged, you ordered the sea lanes to be kept open, and thousands of soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines responded. Because of your leadership, the Navy was there in better ships, equipped with the latest in advanced technology, manned by dedicated sailors. Our Navy's presence there demonstrated how modern, responsive military forces can protect the vital interests of free nations and promote peace.
That's the great capability of the Navy, the ability to respond, go to anywhere, almost anywhere in the world on a moment's notice, stay there, do the mission, and then come back home when the mission's over.
Today, America's interests around the world are being guarded by the finest men and women ever to wear the uniform.
Being an immigrant in the United States, and now coming from the Philippines, I was allowed the opportunity to go to school here and do what I wanted. And when I got out of high school, I chose to join the Army because it was time to pay back the opportunity that the United States gave me.
At home, the Coast Guard continues to perform its vital missions along our inland waterways and coastal borders.
The mission of the Coast Guard today is more important than ever. We continue to conduct search and rescue operations on all of our waterways. We help stop drugs from coming into the country, and we deal with environmental issues that affect everybody in the country.
The equipment we use is the best we've ever had, and it will continue to keep us strong and ready in the future.
Just a few short years ago, only about half of our fighters were mission ready at any given time. But today, because of significant advances in technology, these newer aircraft are more reliable, easier to maintain, and ready to fly, fight, and win.
If we have to fight on land, we're ready. On the sea, we're ready. In the air, we're ready. And in the future, we'll be ready. Mr. President, during the past 8 years of a renewed and strengthened America, a new generation of future leaders has enlisted in the armed forces. Leaders who will continue to carry the pride instilled in them by your support. Future generations will thank you. And today, we thank you.
Mr. President, on behalf of all the men and women of the Army, the Air Force, Navy, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard, I'd like to say thanks. Thanks for your leadership and support of the armed forces. Thanks for the equipment which has allowed us to do our job of keeping America free. Thanks to you, Americans are proud to say, God bless the USA.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, worked for all my life, and I had to start again, just my children and my wife. Thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away.
And so, the Department of Defense has produced and has aired its own salute to the President, a review of what he has done for it in terms of military and in terms of morale. As the house lights begin to illuminate once again this big cavern of the new Air Force One complex at Andrews Air Force Base, and the President prepares to speak.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. And I express the thanks of my roommate, who unfortunately is ill and has no voice, and tried to get up and get here, and I sent her back to bed. It's been my responsibility, my duty, and very much my honor to serve as Commander-in-Chief of this nation's armed forces these past 8 years. That is the most sacred, most important task of the presidency. Since our nation's founding, the primary obligation of the national government has been the common defense of these United States. But as I have sought to perform this sacred task as best I could, I've done so with the knowledge that my role in this day-to-day-to-day effort, from sunrise to sunrise, every moment of every hour of every day of every year, is a glancing one compared to yours. Yes, today America is at peace. Today her defenses are strong, and she stands proud and tall in the sight of the world. And the credit, the gratitude of a nation comfortable and at peace, properly goes not to me, but rather to all of you. For you have, of your own free and true goodwill, chosen to spend all or part of your lives in service to your country and your countrymen. We live in an age of great prosperity and ease, a time when many people your age are getting themselves established in the world in circumstances of comfort that would astonish your ancestors. You've chosen a different path, a path of service to country and to others rather than to self. You have made yourselves a shining example of how men and women can find within themselves qualities of self-sacrifice, bravery, camaraderie, and true courage. These are many of the noblest virtues to which humankind can aspire. They are martial virtues. You have made the comfortable lives of your fellow Americans possible by taking on these responsibilities by choice. And over the past 8 years, the luster has been restored to the reputation of our fighting forces. After a time during which it was shamefully fashionable to deride and even condemn service such as yours, those days will never come again. But it's not just your fellow Americans who owe you a debt. No, I believe many more do. For I believe that military service in the armed forces of the United States is a profound form of service to all humankind. You stand engaged in an effort to keep America safe at home, to protect our allies and interests abroad, to keep the seas and the skies free of threat. Just as America stands as an example to the world of the inestimable benefits of freedom and democracy, so too an America with the capacity to project her power for the purpose of protecting and expanding freedom and democracy abroad benefits the suffering people of the world. Some might consider those words somewhat controversial, but to them I just say this. Just ask the freedom-loving people of Grenada whether American military power is a good thing or not. Because we remain strong, because we acted when we believed we had to, in the past 8 years, not one inch of ground on this earth fell under communist control. We cannot name the tens of millions who have been saved from that fate, so we cannot ask them. Rather, ask those unfortunate enough to have lived under communism. Ask them whether America should be strong. Ask them whether America should stand tall. Ask them. But you don't have to. You know the answer. You were and are willing to fight and die for America and for freedom and democracy. And some have, 595 to be exact, over these past 8 years. Some have died. They're not with us today because they're at God's right hand. In the air and on the seas, in battle or as victims of terrorism, they gave their lives while in the service of their country, while representing us and defending what we hold dear. They volunteered. They chose to serve. They gave their lives. They are our heroes. I have seen the faces of those who served with them and those who commanded them, and I know the truth of the old maxim that there is none who hates war as much as he who knows it well. none who knows as well how agonizingly high are its costs, how agonizing are its loss. And I would like to ask right now that we observe a moment of silence in memory of those we have lost. Amen. In 1973, at the end of the arduous War of Independence, George Washington took his final leave of the armies that had set America free and painted in eloquent words a noble portrait of the American armed forces that describes them and the society as a whole, I might add, to this very day. For who, he said, has before seen a disciplined army formed at once from such raw materials? Who could imagine that the most violent local prejudices would cease so soon, and that men who came from the different parts of the continent, strongly disposed to despise and quarrel with each other, would instantly become but one patriotic brand of brothers? Or who, that was not on the spot, can trace the steps by which such a wonderful revolution has been effected and such a glorious period put to all our warlike toils? But who indeed? Where, I have at times asked myself, where do you all come from? How have you managed to cohere into the crack, disciplined, patriotic band of brothers I see before me this morning? Well, the answer's simple. You come from the Southwest and the Northeast, from the Rockies and the Adirondacks, from the inner cities and the most remote of farms. You come from America, and you are America's pride. And on behalf of all America, I thank you and pray God that he may bless you now and forever. God bless you, and thank you.